This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in the classroom?
For some students in Washington, they were able to go back into the classroom. More of a hybrid situation where some students are going in, some students are staying home, and they're switching it up. But some teachers are upset. Some of them are even in tears. The teachers in the Peninsula School District, for example, they claim they're not being listened to when it comes to their concerns about opening up their classrooms.
Until today, I had not received any information about who or what kids would be in my classroom, but we should not have been asked to fit 18 students in a room with a capacity of 15.
We should not have even been asked. Where kindergarten and first graders are going into the school. At a school board meeting last week, before today's opening, teachers like that one said the district isn't even ready to welcome the kindergartners and the first graders back into class. This teacher spoke with Cairo 7 TV.
We did not get the N95 masks, and I don't know if you have heard, but Tacoma has delayed their start date due to this.
I don't know if you heard, but that's not the case the way that you want it to be. I don't know if you heard, but you do not need an N95 mask as a teacher. What happened in Tacoma, and we talked about it last week, N95 masks supposedly are now needing to be used by some staff members, like custodians, who are being put in a classroom to clean a classroom after a positive case of the coronavirus. Some of the nursing staff members, they recommend that. Now, no one actually needs the N95 mask. The L&I, Labor and Industries Department, that is now enforcing this, is nonsense. Their policies are nonsensical. I spent the weekend trying to make heads or tails out of the conflicting reports. But one thing's for certain. The teacher does not need an N95 mask. I do not wear an N95 mask when I go to the doctor. You know who else doesn't wear the N95 mask when I go to the doctor?
The doctor?
The doctor. The nurses. The front desk staff. The security. The custodians. When we go to grocery stores, guess who's not wearing an N95 mask?
The grocery store employees.
The people who work at the grocery store, nor the customers, are wearing N95 masks. So let's keep that in perspective.
Right now, I feel like we are not being heard.
Right now, you have too many feelings, and they're irrational. They're irrational. You should not be crying like that. Unless you've got an underlying health condition, because this is a woman who is younger, she's not in her 80s, who's in that demographic where there is a potential issue from a health perspective. Unless you've got an underlying issue and you've been like, hey, school, I've got diabetes, I can't do it. And they're saying, suck it up, lady. I don't care about your sugary blood. Get into the office. Get into the class. Okay, then you can go ahead and be upset to the point of tears. You should not be crying like that. That is an insane overreaction.
Shame on you.
She's shaming them.
Yes. My room, my physical space is safe, or so the district says, but it is not ready for these innocent babies to come back and thrive.
Oh my God. These innocent babies who are at the lowest risk of actually getting the coronavirus and suffering a significant reaction. These poor babies, none of whom have actually died or been put into the hospital in Washington State. Oh, these poor babies who have a 99.997 rate of survival. These poor babies. Is that a normal reaction? Do you want that person in front of your kid every single day? Come on, guys. We can have a reasonable conversation about the safety of bringing students back. I think it is our duty. We should be. But she's not an expert. The people who are in the district and within the departments of health, be it in the Peninsula or Puyallup or Pierce County, like, they're looking at this and they're a big part of all of this. The actual experts like Dr. Robert Redfield, who is the director of the CDC, and Admiral Brett Giroir, the Assistant Secretary of Health, both of whom were on the show a total of three times over the course of a month, all said it is safe to bring kids back into the classroom with reasonable accommodations like giving out masks. But so many people just don't like it. Over in Puyallup, they're having the exact same issue, but their comms director, Sarah Gillespie, tells King 5.
We are confident that we've done our due diligence in working with state agencies to make sure that we're able to return students to in-person instruction as safely as possible.
At some point, you have to do your job and teach and stop pretending that the death rate is high. It's tragic and it's serious. But not serious enough in my view, in the view of actual experts, to keep your kid out of class. You have to weigh the damage being done to students who aren't being taught in the classroom, which means they're not retaining the same way as they normally would, and students who are not socializing. And we know, according to studies, since you care about your young babies who are coming into the classroom, when people are not socializing at that age, they have a higher likelihood of developing suicidal thoughts and depression. And I'm willing to bet once we start to look at the actual data over the course of this entire year, you're going to see an increase, an alarming increase in suicides of teenagers. There was a story over the weekend out of Texas about seeing in one town an alarming increase in teen suicide. And part of that is they are tying directly to this virus. Not the virus causing you to commit suicide. That is not one of the issues that the coronavirus causes, but it's an unintended consequence of the policies that are keeping these people out of the classroom, away from their friends. We talked last week to two student athletes who, to perform at the level that they perform on the field, you have to be not just physically fit, but mentally fit as well. Talking about how they and their teammates are suffering emotionally because they're not able to go out there and compete in group sports, team sports. When will the people who are making a big issue, literally in tears, embarrassing themselves, when will they consider that side? You don't hear that often, do you? I hear about the teachers scared that they'll get the coronavirus, despite everyone who is an actual expert saying, no, we're taking care of this. That same teacher, do you think she cries when she goes into the Whole Foods? I just need eggs, and when I'm walking in here, I'm going to get the COVID because they won't give me an N95 mask. Oh, just, I want eggs, and I want almond milk, but they only have coconut milk. Where did all the almond milk go?
They stand at the front of the doors debating whether or not to go in, and then every time somebody walks past them, they flinch.
No, when someone walks past, they do the whole thing where a teenager is outside of the 7-Eleven and goes up to the shadiest-looking male, usually, that will walk in. Hey, if I give you $20, can you buy me beer? She's like, if I give you $6.17, could you get me the almond milk? But not, like, the organic kind, and not coconut milk. I don't like the way it tastes. That's what she does. I feel bad, but not really. For
you don't feel bad.
I mean, part of me wonders if she's a fan and listening.
No way. You think that she's listening?
The other part of me realizes our listeners are not insane.
There you go. You answered your own question.
That's just a part of me.
You have a 3-hour radio show. If you don't make fun of somebody, what are you supposed to do with all 3 hours?
Fair point. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, we're going to dive into some previewing of tomorrow's debate. CNN is all up in arms that the moderators aren't going to be fact-checking. Yeah, that's normal. We'll tell you why. Don't forget, tomorrow night, 6 p.m., we start our live commercial-free coverage of the debate. With that in mind, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
You see, that debate is going to be moderated by Chris Wallace of Fox News. That's awesome. Chris is going to do a really good job. But CNN is upset. The same network that did not get chosen to have anything to do with the debates, they're upset specifically that Chris Wallace will not be tasked with fact-checking the candidates in real time. Really, what they're saying is we're mad that Chris Wallace is not going to call out Donald Trump, because Donald Trump lies. But as Frank Fahrenkopf points out, and he's the co-chair of the Commission on Presidential Debates, it's not the job of the moderator, be it Chris Wallace, who CNN calls out because they hate Fox News and get their butts kicked in the ratings every single day by Fox News. It's not the role of any of the moderators to do that.
If one of these candidates says something on the stage Tuesday, that it's the role of the other person in a debate to be the one to raise that and say, wait a minute, you're changing your position and so forth, rather than the moderator. So the moderator is a facilitator. And one of the things that we've been successful at doing, and if you review what we did in 2016 and in 2012 before that, is get the candidates to debate, talk to each other about their positions. So we don't expect Chris or our other moderators to be fact checkers. The minute the TV is off, there are going to be plenty of fact checkers in every newspaper and every television station in the world. That's not the role, the main role of our moderators.
And again, and here's how CNN is going to perform their fact checks. Joe Biden will have said many, many, many things that are just factually inaccurate. But they'll say, you know, on the substance, for the with some minor errors, and this is Jason Tells the Future at 5:16. We'll figure this one out pretty quickly tomorrow. With very few minor issues, Joe Biden was overwhelmingly truthful. It was Donald Trump who told a lie. For example, Donald Trump said the debate was happening on Wednesday. Yes, he corrected himself later and said Tuesday, but when he said Wednesday, we say that's a lie, because it clearly wasn't Wednesday, was it? It's Tuesday. That's the kind of stuff that you're going to get. But moreover, we as an audience shouldn't want a live fact check, unless there's something that is just demonstrably false that needs correcting because it's a part of the question, or there's a clear mistake and it sends a message from the candidate that they did not intend to, like it was an honest mistake. For the most part, you do not want the moderators getting involved, because then the moderators come off as choosing a side. And it then ends up helping the candidate that isn't being called out. Imagine for a moment what it would be like if the fact checker got it wrong. You don't have to go back that far to see how that kind of stuff plays out. Candy Crowley of CNN was the moderator between the debate between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. And they were talking about Benghazi, which the Obama administration downplayed from the start. It took them a very long time to directly call it a terrorist attack. Instead, what they did was blame the Benghazi attack on a YouTube video that mysteriously this group that seemed awfully organized just happened to find out about. And it was just a spontaneous eruption of violence that killed some Americans. I mean, why even talk about it? What difference does it make? Well, Candy Crowley got involved when Mitt Romney went in for the attack, rightly, against Obama.
You said in the Rose Garden, the day after the attack, it was an act of terror. It was not a spontaneous demonstration. Is that what?
So again, he's correcting Obama, who lied and said the day after the Benghazi attack, he immediately called it a terrorist attack.
Just saying.
Please proceed, Governor.
I want to make sure we get that for the record, because it took the president 14 days before he called the attack in Benghazi an act of terror.
Get the transcript.
He did, in fact, sir. So let me call it an act of terror.
Can you say that a little louder, Candy?
He did call it an act of terror.
No, he did not call it an act of terror. What he was saying at the time, generally speaking, he said acts of terror will not move us. That's what he said. And that's an important distinction to make. Because people were asking him to specifically call it out as an act of terrorism, which of course went directly against what his administration was saying at the time. Susan Rice being put on the Sunday shows, the ambassador at the time, talking about how this was a spontaneous act. And everyone else looked at this and were like, how did these random militants find out about one small YouTube video? What are you talking about? This was organized and coordinated. And so what the president did was speak generally about acts of terror. Acts more than one. The Washington Post, which is not friendly to conservatives, directly called it a lie. And in their fact check, after this debate, they said, actually, the president spoke in vague terms, usually wrapped in a patriotic fervor. One could presume he was speaking of the incident in Libya, but he did not affirmatively state that the American ambassador died because of a quote-unquote act of terror. This was a significant moment because it looked like Mitt Romney didn't know what he was talking about. And most people don't watch CNN and MSNBC and Fox News every single day. Most Americans don't read the fact checks that occur in the Washington Post or CBS News, which, by the way, also said that was not true, what Candy Crowley said. They just watch moments of a debate. And the people who were on the fence that night who saw this probably stepped back and said, oof. I mean, I kind of like Mitt Romney. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And I was looking for a president who's going to take the war on terror seriously. And even Candy Crowley, the moderator, admitted that the president was right when he wasn't. That's why you don't want that sort of stuff there. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
Obviously, a lot of conservatives are excited about the idea of Amy Coney Barrett being the next justice on the Supreme Court, delivering to us an actual conservative Supreme Court where we have the numbers, which guarantees that crazy laws that get proposed in cities like Seattle, they end up getting challenged and then thrown out. And I thought the president had a fun comment today about why he nominated her, despite all the uproar from the left.
She's one of our nation's most brilliant legal minds, and I think she'll do very well. We're moving along very quickly. Tremendous unity in the Republican Party. It's the consequence of winning elections, which we did very substantially, both in the Senate and obviously in the White House. And I think we're going to take back the House.
They're not going to take back the House. I wish they would. That's not going to happen. But there are some people who are pretending to be shocked by this. And Senator Mike Lee on ABC News today was all like, he's doing what he said he was going to do.
President Donald Trump campaigned in 2016. He's campaigning again this time, promising to appoint judges to federal courts and justices to the U.S. Supreme Court who are textualists and who are originalists, who interpret the law based on what it says rather than on the basis of what they might wish that it said. This is exactly what he promised to do, and he's fulfilling that promise. I think the American people respect somebody who's willing to stand behind his campaign promises, which is what he's doing with Judge Barrett.
Whoa. He's actually following through on a campaign promise. Oh. We're going to continue to discuss what the president needs to do tomorrow during the debate, how he's going to handle the controversy about the Supreme Court when Liz Harrington stops by. She's the national GOP spokesperson. AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Tomorrow night at 6 p.m., we'll be carrying the first presidential debate between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. We'll be carrying it live, commercial-free, right here on KTTH. Helping us explain what's on the line tomorrow night is our good friend Liz Harrington, the national GOP spokesperson. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason, thanks for having me.
What's the biggest difference between these two candidates that will be exposed tomorrow night?
I think the records. I really do think it's going to be a complete contrast between what President Trump, in a history-making presidency in less than one term, has been able to deliver, whether it's the biggest trade deal of all time, USMCA, whether it's three peace deals in the Middle East in less than 30 days, whether it's rebuilding the military and defeating ISIS, and so many of these forward-looking things like Space Force. And then you look at Joe Biden, what can he talk about? He's been in the swamp for a half a century. He's never delivered. I mean, this really should be the most amazing debate performance you'd ever seen, because nobody has more experience in talking in the swamp than Joe Biden. And after all, he just recently admitted he's been in the Senate for, 180 years. but I think it really is. It's a contrast in every way you slice it, whether it's the record or the future, the agenda. And that's a big difference as well. These two men could not be more different, whether it's how President Trump made his fortune in the private sector versus the Biden family that made their fortunes off selling the public sector. And their agenda, the most conservative president we've ever had, pro-growth, pro-freedom, more opportunity, versus the most far-left radical socialist ticket, a platform written by the socialist Bernie Sanders, hiking everyone's taxes, moving us towards a single-payer system, defunding the police, all of these radical ideas that Democrats are embracing now. Every way you look at it, there just couldn't be a bigger choice, a bigger contrast for Americans to choose from.
So obviously the Supreme Court issue is going to come up tomorrow night, and the Democrats have sort of tipped their hands at their strategy, at least in part, saying that it's totally hypocritical. Now, you know, making a nuanced argument during a debate isn't always very effective, and comparing what the situation is now to what it was back in 2016 when the Republicans said no to Merrick Garland. So what is the strategy?
I think it's just talking about the Constitution. And, oh, by the way, we follow through our promises. Joe Biden won't even release a list of who he would put on the court. And I think it's talking about the Constitution in the sense that, of course, we have the constitutional duty and authority to do this, the White House and the Senate, but also talk about the Constitution and what Democrats are literally promising to pack the Supreme Court and tear it all up and never allow their power to be threatened again just because they lost elections fair and square. I think that's how you talk about it, because Democrats are embracing this radical agenda where they want to rewrite rulings from the bench. They just want their left-wing agenda carried out in all stages of government, and they are showing they have no problem using mobs to try to intimidate senators. They have no problem just getting rid of separation of powers and putting in a bunch of far-left justices. I think this is a winning issue for President Trump, especially when you think of just the promises made, promises kept. He said he would put originalist, constitutionalist judges on the bench. He's done that and then some. I mean, he's appointed so many, over 200 judges throughout the federal judiciary. That's a big difference. And Joe Biden, he can't even be honest about who he'd put on there because we know they'd be so far to the left and would legislate from the bench.
Liz Harrington joining us on the line, national spokesperson for the GOP. We're previewing tomorrow night's debate, which we will be carrying live, commercial-free, starting at 6 o'clock. Text the keyword APP to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link so you'll get that alert once the debate starts. Polling does indicate a significant divide between female voters and their enthusiasm for President Trump. Trump is doing very, very well amongst men. We're obviously seeing some significant growth within communities of color, and yet women still going towards Joe Biden. So how can the president use the debate tomorrow to win back some of that support?
I think you can talk about law and order and school choice. These are fundamental issues that are very important to women, really all Americans. But what we've seen throughout this pandemic and just Democrats on all levels of state and local governments taking more power, saying who can go to church, who's essential, who's not, you can't go to school. This is a big issue, closing down the schools, but it transcends just the pandemic from communist China. It is actually what Democrats have been doing for a very long time, blocking families, their parents' decisions of where they send their kid to school. And I think that's going to be a big issue we can talk about. But Joe Biden has all but said, oh, you want the riots to stop? Then elect me. And that is very, voters do not like that. They want law and order. They do not like what Democrats are doing, defunding the police, of course, in Seattle and Portland, Minneapolis, and elsewhere. And that's in the Joe Biden agenda to get rid of cash bail, complete open borders, total lawlessness. And President Trump's certainly going to be talking about the radical Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders agenda that they have that would destroy public safety. And, of course, on the economic front, destroys opportunity. And I think those are huge issues really to all Americans, but they do resonate with women as well.
And the other issue that's going to resonate with absolutely everyone is just the general performances. Joe Biden tends to be short-tempered. He is easily confused. However, from an energy perspective, he has tended to show up to the debate nights. Is there a fear that the country won't see him as that sort of gaffe-prone old man, which we know would be devastating to his campaign if that's the Joe Biden that shows up tomorrow?
Well, we're certainly highlighting every instance that he is out there not able to perform clearly. But that's clearly what they're doing here, right? I mean, we had another lid before 10 a.m. this morning. We're going to have we're not going to see any trace of Joe Biden until it's the time of the debate. I mean, it's clear that what they're doing. They're trying to get him as well rested as they can, I think. But in the end, it doesn't matter, because the most important thing is where are you going to take the country? And I think Americans are smart. They understand that, well, it's not even really going to be Joe Biden. The radical left is using him to usher in their agenda. Mm-hmm. And that's what matters here. We have to defend our freedom. The Democrat Party has gone so far to the left. I think there needs to be a reckoning in that party. They need to root out the socialist Marxist movements within it that they've championed all summer. They're chanting death to America on American streets. It's just simply appalling that they're unable to even call out these dangerous movements. And so I think it's all going to be on the line. And President Trump is going to talk about all these issues that really matter. It's about keeping America, America. It's about defending our freedoms. And really, this is the biggest election. So much is at stake when you look at their records versus their agendas and everything else. It really matters. And I think that's going to come across, because the time is now. We've got to defend it.
There you go. Tomorrow night, 6 p.m., we'll be carrying the debate live right here on KTTH. Text app to 1-800-465-8770, and we'll send you a link directly to the speech or to the debate when it occurs tomorrow night at 6. Liz Harrington, National GOP spokesperson, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Always good to be with you.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, a Snohomish County Council member decided to post an image of a Molotov cocktail, saying it's a good reminder. Good reminder of what? To use it against cops? The Everett Police Association president is going to stop by with his take. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. While Molotov cocktail attacks against police officers surge in this region, one council member out of Snohomish County, she seemingly promoted more of it. Megan Dunn is a Democrat from Everett, and she posted on her personal Facebook page last week a stitching of a Molotov cocktail. And the text accompanying it read, "Be the light you want to see in the world." In her Facebook post, she said the stitching was, quote, a good reminder. A good reminder of what? Using Molotov cocktails? Joining me on the line is Sergeant James Collier. He's the president of the Everett Police Officers Association. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for having us.
So when you first saw this post, what was your reaction?
Well, it was shocking, and had to look at it a couple times. I saw it on social media, posted on some other sites, and it was shocking.
Why was it so shocking to you? What did you take out of it?
Well, I mean, I've heard that quote before, and it's a bit of it's taken from a Gandhi comment, and it was instead of having a shining light or a candle or a sunlight in there to be that shining light in the world, there was this Molotov cocktail. We've seen our friends in law enforcement have these thrown at them at these riots. We have friends that have actually been injured. We've seen it in Portland and Seattle, and and it was shocking. It was tough to see that coming from an elected official.
Now, she put out a statement, Megan Dunn, in which she says it wasn't supposed to be a threat of violence. She said she, and this part is kind of bizarre to me, she did not connect the Molotov cocktail imagery to police violence. Do you buy that?
So when you look at, I mean, in that post, she said a counterculture cross-stitch art project. And my belief with, you know, in the definition of counterculture is, you know, we reject or oppose dominant values and behavior in society. Well, so this counterculture of violence isn't acceptable. This isn't a hippie movement like the 60s. This is a violent counterculture movement. Mm-hmm. So I find it difficult. Megan is an intelligent woman, and I don't believe that she did not know what a Molotov cocktail is and what it represents in this counterculture.
It's interesting because in the statement that she released, which, by the way, you can see the image that we're talking about and read her statement, just text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. In her comment, she said, "I did not make the connection with this image as violence against police, but rather as a reminder to continue to strive for systemic reforms and being brighter than a candle for the change you want to see in the world." I mean, that just strange credulity, that position, because the very activists who are out on the streets using Molotov cocktails against the police, they're also pushing for systemic reforms, and they're using these deadly weapons to pursue that political agenda. I just don't believe this response that she's putting out there.
Correct, Jason. If you look on her Facebook page, she has a post from Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and it says, "Fight for the things that you care about, but do it in a way that will lead others to join you." And I couldn't agree more with that statement. And with her counter to this posting of this Molotov cocktail, I mean, that's not the way that we bring people together to make change and to have other people join you, to have good conversations. We believe in being held accountable. We believe that there are things that we can do better. But this isn't the way to do it, to incite violence against police officers and support it. She has a lot of followers who believe passionately in this movement, and it's frightening. We're mothers, fathers, parents, going out and doing a job that it's not easy. It's not an easy job.
No. Just joining us, we're talking with Sergeant James Collier. He's the president of the Everett Police Officers Association. After Megan Dunn, Snohomish County Council member who represents the 2nd District, posted on our Facebook page an image of a Molotov cocktail with the text, "Be the light you want to see in the world." And in the post that she put on her Facebook page, her personal Facebook page, she said that this was a good reminder. You have called for her to resign. Do you still hold that position?
Jason, she's reached out. She's called me a couple times. I haven't been able to connect with her to talk with her, but I will. I think as leaders in the community, we need to meet with people who don't have the same beliefs, whether it's politically or how we do it. So I will meet with her. We will talk. She has issued an apology, and we've accepted that to the degree of to which what the sincerity is. I'm not sure if the apology goes super deep. I've read it, and there's some yeah buts in there.
Yeah. It's filled with that, right? I mean, she equivocates. She's not just simply saying, "I'm sorry." It's just like, no, that wasn't the intention, and I took it on my, by the way, my personal Facebook page, as if that matters.
Correct. I mean, I would have wished that she would have just said, you know, fell on her sword and just apologized and we move forward. I'm not going to call for her to resign. I know people can vote. They can speak with their voice and their vote. And I hope that, you know, she can learn from other leaders. John Lovick is a leader in our community. He's been county council or county exec. He's been our sheriff. He's been in Olympia. She claims he's a mentor. You know, we have a mayor in the city of Everett who puts out a proclamation. She goes by actions, wants to engage and to be diverse and still have a robust, you know, public safety infrastructure. You can still do that.
And that's really what this is about. And you point to, we should note, to lawmakers who are Democrats, that you're not going after Megan Dunn because she's a Democrat. You're going after her because she posted something pretty odious.
Absolutely not. It has nothing to do with politics. It's got everything to do about, you know, not promoting this violence, this continued violence against police officers and the public. Our private citizens are suffering right along with the rest of us with this violence.
Now, obviously, in Seattle and Portland, and in some ways Olympia, they've been dealing with some pretty nasty assaults against law enforcement in a community that seems to be pretty anti-police. How is it right now in the city of Everett?
Well, what we're seeing in Everett is we've been fortunate, and we haven't had the violence, but just recently we've had a few protests that have been where they've surrounded the police car, they've kicked the police car. They're starting to block some streets, and so we're starting to see a bit more of that. Not so peaceful. We've had plenty of great people stand on the corner and hold their signs and ask for people to honk and support, and that's great. You know, we all support that. But we're beginning to see this creep effect coming into Snohomish County of, escalating in blocking out the traffic and being a little bit more confrontational.
Yeah, and we say on the show a lot that bad policies and bad behavior from activists in Seattle has a tendency to spread, and what we don't want to have happen is that happen in Snohomish County or in Everett in particular. So obviously, keep doing the work that you guys are doing. Thank you so much for calling out Megan Dunn for this rather despicable post that she has. And we look forward to learning about that conversation that you have with her when the time actually comes. Again, we've been talking with Sergeant James Collier, president of the Everett Police Officers Association. Thank you for everything that you do. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for all your support and holding us accountable as always. Appreciate it.
We do our best. Again, if you want to see this particular photo and read her response and check out my analysis, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro right here on KTTA.